today saw the release of key data that speak to how the consumer is faring. Consumer price inflation rose by 4.6% in June on a year-on-year basis. That compares with a rise of 4.4% in May. Retail sales data was also out. For the month of May, they rose by 1.9%. That's a significant increase on the 0.5% registered in April, also on a year-on-year basis. Well, to get a sense of what the numbers mean, I'm joined on the line by Jason Muscat. He's an economist at FNB. Thanks very much for joining us, Jason. Let's start with the consumer price inflation number. That's ticking up, and even on a month-on-month basis, it rose by 0.4%. So what were the key drivers behind the uptick?
No, the primary driver behind the increase was the 82 cent a litre fuel price increase in the month. That's definitely had quite a significant impact, and was one of the big contributors. We have, however, seen quite a big offset by the housing and rentals component, which actually led the inflation print of 4.6% coming in lower than what we had expected. We thought it would probably be 4.8%. And while we're encouraged by the number, I think it's symptomatic of very weak domestic demand.
And I think this speaks directly to what you've said, but you can break it down a little bit. I see that the metric of core inflation actually came down a little bit.
Definitely. Now, core inflation is a measure of, it excludes energy and fuel costs and et cetera. So that's a real indicator of underlying demand, and that moderated from 4.4% in April to 4.2%, which is again suggestive of weak economic growth. We also saw that, just talking to that 82 cents a litre increase, we saw that the petrol prices went up 16.3% year on year, and private transport costs 13.5%. And public transport costs obviously are going to be negatively affected because those have been passed on to the consumer, and those were up 3.1% year on year. So consumers are definitely feeling the pinch. Well, yes, we are encouraged that it's a softer number than we had expected, but where we probably find some relief is that in tomorrow's Monetary Policy Committee statement, the Reserve Bank will very likely opt to keep the rates unchanged.
What's happening with food inflation, which had been coming down in the recent past? Of course, I ask this because it's quite important, particularly for the poor who spend a greater proportion of their income on foodstuff.
Of course. The poor spend a disproportionate amount on things like food and inflation, food and petrol in particular. We know that petrol and public transport prices have been increasing. One plus, although it must be a small comfort, is that food inflation is relatively stable at 3.1%. It was 3% in April. And that's really on the back of a much better rainfall and harvest that we had through into 2018. And we're still reaping the benefits of that. I think we're also quite fortunate is that a lot of retailers, because demand is so weak, have been reluctant to pass on many of the costs associated with the VAT increase. And that has shielded particularly the low-income earners. And we know that the presidency is looking into ways to mitigate some of these rising costs, particularly for the poor, and expand on the VAT-exempt items within the inflation basket.
But realistically speaking, Jason, what initiatives can they come up with?
Well, I think the one thing is to foster confidence in our economy. If we can, and we know that our president has been on a $100 billion investment drive, and what that does is it brings money into our country, which makes us less reliant on portfolio inflows, which can be at risk of flight at any moment. And that will strengthen the currency, and that will lead to low inflation. There's certainly nothing we can do in terms of the oil price. Those are regulated predominantly by OPEC, but a little bit of confidence can go a long way, particularly attracting investment and creating jobs.
Yeah. Let's take a look at the retail sales number. As I mentioned, the May number was up 1.9% year on year. It's quite surprising when we think that this is a time when consumers have been bludgeoned by all these higher taxes and fuel prices that you've mentioned already. So what were the key drivers there?
Well, it was quite an interesting mix. We saw that general retailers and hardware stores contracted by minus 1.1% and 0.9%, and food and beverages was down nearly 2%. So it's just, for me, a symptomatic of how consumers are having to adjust their spending patterns in order to accommodate the higher transport costs. So we did see furniture was up 14-odd percent. But that's off a very low base. I can't see that furniture sales will be holding up at these levels. We saw on Monday the consumer confidence numbers came out, and we saw that consumers are now much less likely to buy durable goods over the next couple of months. So we think that sector will come under pressure. Clothing is also not too bad. It was up 4.1%. But I think what we are seeing here is people are cutting back in certain areas in order to fund those transport costs, which are now obviously more expensive. But we think that a lot of the momentum that we are seeing, albeit modest, in retail trade sales is on the back of retailers not passing on those costs to us as consumers.
But then what does that really mean? I mean, you know, you talked about the hardware area. I spoke to your colleague, John Luce, who's your property economist there, about that particular area. It seems to be a consistent thing, and it's quite worrying what will happen in terms of jobs in that particular sector.
Definitely. I think what we have typically seen in the past is that when housing sales and house price increases remain relatively weak, people tend to spend more on hardware because what they, in a sense, do rather than sell their house, they try and improve it through DIY and, you know, making small adjustments. And now the situation seems to imply that because consumption is having to be shifted so dramatically away from these traditional avenues, now suggest that even hardware sales are starting to come under pressure in what should have been an environment where they'd actually benefit.
We've seen that the productive sectors of the economy are not exactly shooting the lights out. Of course, the primary sector, mining, recording some contraction. But when you add this retail sales data to the Q2 picture, what does it suggest that GDP will look like for the second quarter, especially given that some people are beginning to talk about the R word?
Yeah, I'm reluctant to use the R word. I don't think we're headed for a recession. But you're absolutely right. Mining is particularly weak. And part of that is because of some of the trade tariffs imposed on Chinese steel. We've seen the gold sector essentially decimated since a lot of the closures and the rising costs there. And the manufacturing sector has also been very weak, not only because we haven't been exporting as much as we should, but because the domestic economy is relatively weak. If I input some of these numbers into the second quarter, it suggests that we are going to escape a recession. We expect growth with these preliminary numbers at hand to be about 0.5% quarter on quarter. So definitely not robust growth by any stretch of the imagination. But I think psychologically, it's a positive in that we aren't talking about that R word.
Now, earlier in our conversation, you did touch on the monetary policy decision coming out tomorrow. You think that they're going to keep the rates on hold. But given the way that the inflation picture is developing, do you think that we might get a rate hike later in the year?
I think it's less dependent on South Africa at the moment. I think what's important to remember here is that monetary policy in the United States is beginning to tighten. And because of that, we are less reliant on what our internal inflation numbers suggest and more dependent on what we are seeing in developed markets, particularly the U.S. So if they start to hike interest rates more aggressively than we had expected, we would see an outflow of funds, which would lead to rand weakening, and then we'd be forced to follow. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case. In fact, we think that inflation is going to remain relatively contained, and that the interest rates will probably only begin to rise and gradually in the second half of next year.
What do you think has been holding the rand up? I mean, we've got a wider current account deficit that was reported by the Reserve Bank. And as you've mentioned, emerging markets are very susceptible. You know, every time something happens exogenously, we get affected. What do you think is holding the rand up at the moment?
You're right. It's a bit of a strange scenario. We've seen a very disappointing current account deficit and certainly disappointing trade numbers. But the rand is trading around 13.22 at the moment, which is very encouraging. I think what we are seeing and what we need to bear in mind is that a lot of the rand movements we've seen recently are not necessarily rand strength or rand weakness, but dollar strength or dollar weakness. And we have seen that the dollar has come off against the rand and against the pound and the euro. So that has definitely helped in terms of providing some rand strength. We've also seen on some of the announcements that the presidency has made in terms of investments that have attracted, and that's going to boost confidence because the markets will start pricing in that those investments are going to start trickling in, which will then make us, again, less reliant on portfolio inflows.
Yeah, I guess they'll have to keep up the momentum. But thanks very much for that, Jason. Thank you for your time. That was Jason Muscat. He's an economist at FNB.